the comparison of kibud av ha'em towards other mitzvahs. And then we measure something, we measure it in comparison to other mitzvahs, and we can glean an understanding. We started with comparing it to the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael and other important mitzvahs. And today we're continuing in that vein with a number of quite fascinating general principles with respect to mitzvahs. What mitzvahs are more important than other mitzvahs? And I have three citations from the Rambam in English. We'll start with that, as we like to, so people can get an insight, and then we'll try to analyze it. The Rambam tells us, that we'll start with the top one. The top one is a Bahilchas Talmud Torah. You know, I really should get the original so we can get the full picture. Okay. What does one do if one has a choice of fulfilling the mitzvah of Talmud Torah or fulfilling a different mitzvah? It's a very serious question. Anyone who's been confronted with this problem knows that it's a very serious one. And what does one do? So the Rambam discusses this in the third chapter of the laws of Talmud Torah. And the Rambam tells us that a person has to make the following decision. He says, Talmud Torah is the greatest mitzvah. It's fantastic. It's so important. Having said all that, and he's in Hilchos Talmud Torah, he says, when a person is confronted with the performance of a mitzvah in the study of Torah, he says, if the mitzvah can, now we pick up with the top line, can be performed by another individual, he should not interrupt his studies. You learn, let someone else do the mitzvah. If not, if no one else can do the mitzvah, he should perform the mitzvah and then return to his studies. Okay, so it's clear in the Rambam, these are based upon the Gemara, what the rules are. And there is a commentary. This is the beautiful Maznaim translation of the Rambam, this commentary. If not, let's see the commentary in English. Thank you. If not, if there is no way the mitzvah can be performed by another person, for example, paying honor to the deceased person or collecting for charity, when one's position will cause one's words to have a greater effect than those of other people. In other words, if someone else does it, it will not be as much covered for the mace. It will not be as much stuck or collected. He should perform the mitzvah. Baruchos 17a teaches, the ultimate of knowledge is tshuva and good deeds. Of course, the Yerushalmi said, would be preferable for a person who studies without performing the mitzvahs never to have been created. Even Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai would not interrupt his studies even for prayer, would stop studying to build a sukkah to find his lulav. And it explains, next paragraph, the ultimate level of fulfillment man can reach is to step beyond his humanity and fulfill God's will, as revealed in the mitzvahs. Nevertheless, priority is given to Torah study because it possesses a twofold advantage over other mitzvahs. First, it leads to their fulfillment. Second, it allows for an internalized connection to be established between the person and Hashem. However, when the person ignores the fulfillment of the mitzvahs, both these advantages are lost. Obviously, the study does not lead to deed. And furthermore, his intellectual activity appears to be a matter of personal interest and not a process of connection to Hashem. And therefore, this explanation is given to the law of the Rambam. Let us repeat one more time the Rambam's overarching principle. A person is studying Torah, and he can either continue studying or do a mitzvah. It depends. If someone else can do the mitzvah, well, let someone else do the mitzvah. You can continue to study Torah. If no one else can do the mitzvah as well as you can, then you close your sefer, close your book, close it to the Chumash, the Gemara, whatever it may be, and run to perform the mitzvah. Okay, this is a very important principle. So let's repeat it one more, a final time. Initially, well, it's going to come up again and again. But we're saying again that a person should stop studying Torah to perform a mitzvah if that mitzvah cannot be performed by others. Okay? So just keep that in mind. That's very, very critical.
What about positive mitzvah, like mitzvah, say, like any mitzvah, you know, like or whatever?
That's what we're talking about.
Well, it's not that somebody else, everybody is trying to do that mitzvah. It's not that somebody else can perform.
No one can perform it for me. You cannot appoint an agent to put on tefillin for you. That would be very, very good. You know, you pay a guy $10 a day. He's put on tefillin for you. You know, daven shachas, I'm too busy. You know, I'm daven mincha, the market is
no,
open.
But if you say I'm learning Torah, that might think that I don't have to put on tefillin.
You might have thought. You might think you don't have to put on tefillin, you don't have to take a lulav, you don't have to sit in sukkah, you don't have to blow shofar, you don't have to put on... It's wrong. You have to stop your learning in order to perform any one of these positive mitzvahs, because they're all obligatory mitzvahs. You must do them. And if you don't do them, your Torah is no Torah, because it's not what we call limud amanas lasos. It's meaningless. So obviously you have to close your book and go do the mitzvah. But it's, let's say there's certain general mitzvahs. Someone else can do it. Someone has to do a particular mitzvah, whatever it may be. So either I close my Gemara and do it, or forgive me now, he'll close his television and do it. So it's better if he closes his television and he does it, and I keep my Gemara open, as opposed to I close my Gemara to do it and he keeps his television open. Good. So this is an introduction which is not directly related to our topic, you might think. We're discussing Kibbutz Av Em. How are we supposed to do with this? We'll see how this comes very much into play. What does a chesed that's urgent mean? I'm with my sefer, and she's out there. So it depends. If there's no one else there, I look out the window, there's no one around. Only this old lady, I have to close my book, run, help across the street, and go back to my book. But if there's 10 other people around, and I want to jump into the mitzvah. No! The other people around, they can do it, and I'll continue my studies. Chesed is a tremendous mitzvah. It's a good example.
Right. Everybody can't help that.
Exactly. You really are in the way.
Yeah.
Everyone wants it. Most of the people are curiosity seekers. Let's be honest. I mean, some people are really, you know, the Hatzolah, they have to come. Like, everybody appeal for Hatzolah. They should come. A doctor should come. The rest, they're better off if you're not there. They always say, clear the room. Okay, that's right. Having said all this, let us turn our attention now to the halachas of Kibbutz Av Em. So we were discussing last time Now, I haven't opened the Shulchan Aruch yet. This is a big book by Kibbutz Av Em. It's found in the Yoredeya, Simen Reish Men. The very last, the 25 paragraphs. The very last one says that if a father wants, a student wants to go to another place to learn Torah, he's going to learn better over there. And his father says, no, you can't go there. For whatever reason, he's afraid that it's not safe. For whatever reason, he said, you're not required to obey your father. We've been that's the Rashi, which was really the end of last week's parasha, but it's also the beginning of this week's parasha, luckily. Right? Everyone knows this week's parasha, Rashi refers to it again. Yaakov Avinu spent 14 years with Shem Ve'Aver in the yeshiva. I mentioned briefly this morning. And for those 14 years, he wasn't punished. Right? Because Yosef was taken away from him for 22 years, but not for these 14 years, because Torah protected him. That was last week's source sheet. So on this comment of the Shulchan Aruch, the Vilna Gaon usually quotes the sources that we saw last week, that Talmud Torah is greater than Kibbutz Av Em. Very nice. And then it says, listen carefully, Vafilu mishum kol mitzvah she'i'ev sholehi also sayadei acherim nidche Kibbutz Av Em. What does that mean? That's 13. It's about. Let's get down to closer to home, to the laws of father and mother, which we mentioned briefly last week. The following laws apply when a person's father tells him, draw water for me, and he has the opportunity to perform a mitzvah. If it is possible for the mitzvah to be performed by others, they should perform it, and he should concern himself with honoring his father. Okay? For we do not negate the observance of one mitzvah because of the observance of another mitzvah. If there are no others able to perform the other mitzvah, he should perform the mitzvah and neglect his father's honor. Why? For he and his father are obligated to perform the mitzvah. We read this in the Hebrew last week, and now it's in the English in the Rambam, that ata v'avicha chayavim b'mitzvah zu. Right? This is over here found in and 13. Okay, everyone reads this is the Rambam and the laws of honoring a father and mother. Okay? Good. So now let's discuss this issue. The boy wants to learn Torah, and the father says, no, I don't want you to go study the Torah. So that's the rule is found here in the Rambam. Right? What does he say? He says he should perform the mitzvah and neglect his father's honor, for he and his father are obligated to perform the mitzvah. Since he and his father are obligated to study Torah, it's an obligation. So he can neglect honoring his father and go study the Torah. Why? How do we know this? So the Vilna Gaon has two words. The Vilna Gaon says, in describing the rationale behind this, he says, again, just the words are important, Vafilu mishum kol mitzvah, even another mitzvah, which cannot be performed by others, what's the rule? We just read it. Let's read it one more time. If there are no others to perform the other mitzvah, because it can't be performed except by him, he should perform the mitzvah and neglect his father's honor, for he and his father are obligated to perform the mitzvah. So, obviously, another mitzvah which no one else can do, tefillin, sukkah, lulav, you know, whatever it may be, kiddush, you have to do it yourself. Says the Vilna Gaon, if you're permitted to neglect your father's honor to perform any other mitzvah, certainly, says the Vilna Gaon, you are permitted to neglect your father's honor to study Torah, implying that Torah, study of Torah, is more important than these other mitzvahs. Yes?
But your father didn't tell you not to study Torah. He just said, don't study in that dangerous place.
Okay, well, that's a detail. We'll come to that a little bit later. So, but there's a much more fundamental question against the Vilna Gaon.
We just said the opposite.
Oh, that's a good Gemara cup. We just said exactly the opposite. That other mitzvahs, which no one else can do, are stronger than Talmud Torah. You have to close your Gemara and do those other mitzvahs. So how can the Vilna Gaon is going in the wrong direction? He's saying, if you can neglect your father to do other mitzvahs, certainly Talmud Torah. What kind of certainly? It's the other way around. This is a very strong question, yes. I have no claims to the Vilna Gaon, except when he says the Afilu. In directions, in other words, if you were going to neglect your father in order to do some other mitzvah, how much more so you should neglect your father to study Torah? But that's going the wrong direction, because you would have closed the Torah in order to do the mitzvah. So the inequality, if you will, I was a math major, inequalities, going in the wrong direction, because the mitzvah is in a higher level than the study of Torah, because you would close the study of Torah, stop the study of Torah, do the mitzvah. This question against the Vilna Gaon bothered me. I think it's a very, very big question, it seems to me. So it seems that maybe the answer is as follows. We had mentioned before that fundamentally, that's the part that's unfortunately before I read it to you, that the study of Torah is more important than any other mitzvah. That's fundamentally true. And that's what the Vilna Gaon is saying. However, the reason why you have to stop studying Torah in order to perform the mitzvah is because otherwise your Torah is no Torah. Because it's called Lilmot Shalom Manas Lasos, studying Torah without an intention to perform the Torah. That's meaningless. So again, I'm answering you. Conceptually, fundamentally, essentially, Torah is more important than mitzvahs. And therefore, if you neglect your father for mitzvah, you still neglect your father for Torah. Only thing is, the reason why you stop Torah in order to do the mitzvah, because if you're not going to stop Torah to do the mitzvah, your Torah is no Torah. Because Torah is what we call Lilmod Almanas Lasos, studying the laws of Shabbos. I don't keep Shabbos. So what kind of studying Torah is that? So that's a technicality, if you will. If you will. That's a certain...
So why wouldn't you stop learning Torah in order to fulfill the mitzvah and keep it out?
So why wouldn't you say, very good question, let's stop studying Torah to perform the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av, the same as we stop studying Torah in order to shake a lulav.
Nobody else can do it either.
And no one else can do it. Assuming no one else can do it, right? Right. Exactly. No one else. It's my mitzvah. It's my father. Right, 100%. Here's the issue. I want to make a very important point over here. A father, when he is disappointed that his son is not honoring him, but is instead engaged in a mitzvah, which no one else can do, should think twice. Goes back to my overarching principle of last week. Parents should only make demands upon their children which are reasonable. And when they're not reasonable demands, A, they shouldn't be making them, and B, the child doesn't have to necessarily follow them. A parent should realize that his son or his daughter should be involved in mitzvos which no one else can perform. And therefore the parent should say, I understand. And therefore if he's not going to honor me because he or she is busy taking care of a mitzvah which no one else can do, then my request is not really a reasonable request. Now, in the obvious case where I said to my child, be mechallel Shabbos, that's obviously not a reasonable request. But even if I say to them, honor me and disregard mitzvah A, B, or C, it's also not considered to be a reasonable request. Why not? Because I'm also obligated in the mitzvah. So I should have enough common sense and understanding to realize that if I'm obligated in the mitzvah, and he or she is, I should allow them to do the mitzvah, and when they finish the mitzvah, they can come and give me a cup of tea, and not the other way around. This is the logic behind it. That being the case, a person should realize that Talmud Torah fundamentally, remember what we said before, is even more important than a mitzvah. True, a Talmud Torah, you're not going to perform the mitzvah, is meaningless. But over here, it's only a mitzvah because you demand it. You want to make your son or daughter do such a certain thing. Your son is busy learning Torah, right? So you should say, if I am going to forego, in a certain sense, I'm obligated to forego, in Chazanish speak, my request that they do such a thing, so he can perform a mitzvah, even more reason why I should forego my request of him in order that he study Torah. Because as we said before, to answer your question, essentially Torah is even more important than mitzvahs. Only thing is, that if you're going to not do the mitzvah that no one else can do, your Torah is no Torah. It's not my own aslasos. But from the parent's perspective, he can just understand why my son will not come and give me tea when the son is busy taking a lulav. So he should certainly understand why his son is not giving him tea when he is in some yeshiva far away of shame and aver, things of this nature, where he's not around in order to serve me. Now, let's go a step further. Sure.
Because using the reasonableness principle.
Right.
Okay, the father can say, I can understand he's doing a mitzvah which nobody else can do, therefore I have to forego my and he can say that over and over again. But when he's away in yeshiva for 14 years or whatever,
right,
the father said he will never be able to do anything for me because he's always involved in the mitzvah. Now that's not reasonable to me. I think sometimes he should bring me my thing.
That's a very good question. Comes the Gemara and says in Masechta Megillah, no, you're right. If not for the Gemara, you'd be right. And the Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu was away for 14 years, and he was not punished, to demonstrate to us that what he did was okay. Now, let me go back. Let me go back to something which is quite fascinating. Quite fascinating. Listen to this. Listen carefully. What if the son is not learning 1,000 miles away? He's learning one block away. The yeshiva is around the corner from the house. And the father asks the son, listen, I know your schedule. 6:30 is an hour supper break. You don't eat 60 minutes. I'd like you to come at 10 after 7, make me a cup of tea, and we'll talk till 7:20, go back to the yeshiva. And the son says, no, I learned that Talmud Torah is greater than Kibbutz Av. I'm not coming home. What do you say about that boy? What would you give him, Mrs. Freeman?
Huh?
What would you give him? A patch! Yeah, I know what you would give him. Give him a patch, a chutzpah. But why is it a chutzpah? He's right, no. He cites chapter and verse. Yeah?
Overusing the
okay, so let's see what it says in the Svarim. Before we jump on to our own conclusion, let's see what it says in the Svarim. So here in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Mem, there's a sefer called the Pischei Tshuva, one of the super commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. Those of you who have my source sheets can find it on the very bottom of page 200, where it's cited. It's cited when the Shulchan Aruch writes a six-word paragraph. Talmud Torah Gadol Mikibud Avaim. That was last week's shiur. So the Pesachet Shuvah says, quote, Hainu davko em tzarech le'elech chutz le'ir. Right? That's where he has to go. His yeshiva is 100 miles away. Avalim hu va'ir tzarech le'shareis esa'av v'lachza le'torah. So, but if he's in town, around the corner, he has to bring his father the tea and then go back to study the Torah. But of course, this is quite an explanation. If 14 years of learning is more important than Kibbutz Av, then why not 14 minutes of learning? It takes him 2 minutes to walk home, 10 minutes, you know, it's the tea with his father, 2 minutes to walk back, it's 14 minutes. What does it mean, 14 minutes and 14 years? In principle, what's the difference? This requires an explanation. This requires an explanation. I'm telling you the pshat, with my overarching principle. The father has to be reasonable in his request. Your son wants to learn, I'll just give it for example, say only, Lakewood. He has to be in Lakewood because in the old roads lead to Lakewood. He can't, not in Lakewood, you're not learning. Or he has to learn Yerushalayim. Wherever he has to learn, far away from Riverdale. In his mind, that's the place to be. Okay? So Yaakov Avinu went to Shemin Aver. His father Yitzchak also knew how to learn. And he could have found a way somehow or other. That's considered by our rabbis to be a reasonable position on the part of the son. He has to be in the yeshiva environment. But if his yeshiva environment is around the corner, and he's very happy learning there, but he's worried about the 14 minutes the son is being, how should I say, not within his rights. He has an obligation, a responsibility to go home, spend the 14 minutes walking to the house, making the tea, giving to his father, spending a few minutes together, and walking back. And if he comes to the rabbi, and says, the rabbi, my father's making an unreasonable request. He wants me to spend 14 minutes every night to go home and make him tea and come back. And in those 14 minutes, I could be studying 14 more Mishnayos, whatever, so psuki, whatever it may be. Any good rabbi will say, Sonny boy, Talmud boy, you're being wrong. Your father's right. So he said, next comes Pesach, I want to go to Brisk. So he said, if he goes to Brisk, he can't give father, obviously can't bring, come home every day to give his father tea. Then the Rashi will say, now you're right. Because in the case of the Talmud, I mean, there's no question that Shem Weber was the Brisk yeshiva of the time. There's not even a question about it, right? That's for sure. So therefore, that was there. But if he's in this, but if he's around the corner of yeshiva, he has to go back. That's an interesting distinction. This is the logic. It's not my logic. I don't know what I would have said. The logic of the rabbis, quoted in Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries. Yes?
The 14 years you're referring to, you're talking about after he ran away from his parents' house.
His father told him to go, and he had, instead of going straight to the shidduchim, he had to make himself into a bigger shidduch, you know, a better shidduch, you know how it is in his resume. So he went to Brisk for 14 years, you know. We discussed that last time a little bit, whether that we can derive from this case a situation where your father told you not to do it. We weren't sure whether Yitzchak Avinu, by telling him to find the shidduch, was he saying, go to find the shidduch, but don't go to the yeshiva? That's what some say. Or no, that, I don't want to go back to that. We discussed.
Somebody else would make the shidduch, just like Eliezer wasn't made
Yitzchak Avinu. But Yitzchak told him to go. Told him to leave. He had to run away from Esav. Anyway, it's hard to derive too many things from the specifics of that. Of that case. Now,
he needs to play basketball in those 14 minutes with the rest of his chaverim so that he can learn better the rest of the evening. Is that
if I'd be the Rebbe, yeah. I would tell him to go home and serve his father tea and miss out on the basketball.
Can I ask a question? It was my second question from last week. How can you legislate a relationship between a child and a parent? I understand that these are the halakhic rules, that if a relationship is such that this child does not want to go home because of who knows what's going on,
that's why we have people like you.
Yeah.
The rabbi has to give the right answer.
But do you understand?
I'm serious.
So how do you help people to talk to one another?
So the rabbi, I'll answer you.
I don't think that you can just, you know, it has to be
Are you 100% right? The rabbi has to give the right answer. The right answer is go home to your father and give him tea. But I resent it. I said, we have Michelle Cohen. They'll give you her card. You can explain it. She'll work out your resentment. And you shouldn't be resented anymore. And you should understand that you're doing the right thing, not the wrong thing. Most of the resentment comes, what we call language, frumkeit. I'm not doing what the Torah wants me to do. And now the rabbi says, this is what the Torah wants, this is what God wants you to do. You have resentment, you work it out, you know. If you're a Muslim personality, you should work it out yourself. This is what I want to sit with my Gemara. But God wants me to go take his tea to my father. What's more important, what you want or what God wants? So you should, that's the whole point of being a Muslim personality, is you do what God wants. And the rabbi is here to tell you what God wants, but you don't want to do it, you have resentment, it's a problem, I agree with you.
But you understand that's the same thing.
Right.
That's the exact same thing that keeps on the end, it's just on a different level.
Okay, good.
Authority
100%. But as I said before, 3 months later they want to go study in Jerusalem, and they'll go back to the same rabbi, and the rabbi will say, go to Jerusalem. Now the father's upset. There are many stories, but let's just go back to...
His mother was very demanding on him, and he was told to go to Eretz Yisrael, and she died on
that was our first shiur we spoke about 4 weeks ago, but we're not going to review all those things now. They're on tape, and they're all available, I think, on what? No, but why your Torah is now linked to Young Israel of Riverdale website. You can get it all. After we hear all the tapes, come back, we'll talk about it again. Okay, but you two had their hands up. Were the questions answered?
Oh, yeah. Answer
oh. That's true. If every time the boy comes up with tea, the father says, poof, and throws the tea into his son's face, then he doesn't have to go home anymore. That's for sure. Everything has to be with a certain measure of what we call reasonableness.
And how much readjusting his schedule?
That'll be every Rosh Hashiva or Rabbi, we'll have to tell him, you know, how do you readjust? But these are guidelines. You're right. They're only guidelines. It's not meant to legislate for every single case. Yes. Good question. Let's say a boy is in Jerusalem, and the mother says, "I want you home for the Ben Azmana, for the month of Nisan, Pesach time. I want you home for a month." And the boy says, "I don't want to come home for a month because da 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 da. I want to stay in Jerusalem the whole month and sit." That's not in the books. So you have to know who was the child and who were the parents and what. That's where you said that
dynamic. There's no learning going on Ben Azmana.
No. That's not nice. That's not nice. There's no shiurim in Ben Azman. I've been in the yeshivas. There are many yeshivas that they're very full. You go to the Mir Yeshiva, for example. So there are 5,000 talmidim there regular time. Ben Azman, you'll find out that Nebuch down to 2,000 or 1,000. You know, that's a lot of people.
But
if
the yeshiva closes, let's say,
some of them close. Okay. He wants to learn, he'll move to a different yeshiva. My children very often stayed in Eretz Yisrael, and they went to the place which is open straight through. It didn't bother me. I guess it depends. I never asked them to come home. Someone said they wanted to come home. I don't know if they could afford to have them come home. That these are all kinds of considerations.
But I think what you're also talking about is, you know, married children. You can't make...
Married children. They're totally on their own. Married children, that's a whole different ballgame. Everything we're talking about is singles.
Oh,
only discussing singles. Once they're married, they have their spouses to answer to. Maybe next week we'll start, if that's the preference of the audience, to talk about relationships between husband and wife. That's I think, a much more difficult topic than a relationship between children and parents. But I'm willing to get involved in it if that's what people want. Yes?
Last week we talked about that a boy knows better who he wants in his shidduch, and the parent can't mix in.
Not what we said.
All right. Okay, but why? Here we're assuming that a boy always knows which yeshiva is best for him.
As opposed to the father. No, I don't. I'm not assuming that.
That's what you're always saying. Can't the father say, "I think that you're the best yeshiva is the one around the corner"?
Okay.
Not in Yishlein.
That is certainly a possibility. And if the son will go to his Rosh Yeshiva. And Rosh Hashiva, your father's right. Stay at my yeshiva. He's also maybe the guy with him. Stay here. No. The son can't find the rabbi. He's going to tell him that he should go to Yerushalayim, and he shouldn't go to Yerushalayim. That goes back to last week's rules. You can't just take things on yourself. Everything's been a question by a rabbi. Okay, let's go a little bit further. So when we decided that a person has to say, let's take the following case. There's no tefillin in the town. There's no tefillin. The whole city, there's no tefillin. There's no tefillin. And the father says, I want you to stay here to take care of it. Abba, I have no tefillin. So you have no tefillin. That kind of case, what the father's in effect saying is, it's like saying, you know, don't keep Shabbos, don't keep kosher, don't keep tefillin. In that kind of a case, the child is not required to obey his father, and the child is permitted to go leave town, not just for Talmud Torah, for any mitzvah, which in the absence of leaving town, he simply cannot fulfill. Why then, what's new about Talmud Torah? What's Talmud Torah is obviously some kind of special case, right? It's a special case. Take a look at the last line here in the English. Torah study surpasses honoring one's father and mother. Now, that's the last line. That's our Gemara, right? Now, why is that line mentioned separately? Torah study surpasses honoring one's father and mother. Why isn't it subsumed, as we said earlier in the same paragraph 13, that any other mitzvah, if there are no others able to perform the other mitzvah, he should perform the mitzvah and neglect his father's honor. No one else can study Torah but me. They study Torah, it's their mitzvah. My mitzvah requires I should be involved in the study of Torah. So what's new about Talmud Torah? So the answer is, I can give you two or three possibilities. Number one, the logic over here. For he and his father are obligated to perform the mitzvah. That's the rationale which Rambam has for other mitzvahs. That may not apply to Talmud Torah for two reasons. One, he wants to go and study intensively for a year, 14 years. His father's not obligated to do that anymore. His father's now 40-something years old. He has a whole family. He has to support them. He's not going to spend a whole year in the study of Torah. He'll go broke. So you cannot say, technically speaking, he and his father have the same obligation. That's point number one. Point number two, is it an absolute obligation to study Torah day and night? Who said? I'm sorry. Means a minute by day and a minute by night. I'm not against learning Torah beyond the minute.
You're not supposed to say that.
That's in front of Amaratzim, but there's no Amaratzim in this crowd. It's a learned crowd. So what we call it, it's a mitzvah kiyumis. It's a fulfillment of a mitzvah to study Torah every minute. But the obligation proper can be fulfilled with a small amount. So therefore, it cannot necessarily apply this logic, for he and his father are obligated to perform the mitzvahs. Oh. And it seems to me, our final English source, fine. Let's just leave it at this. If we're going to say though that a mitzvah which is not obligatory has a separate status, our last point, because you're not obligated to say all the time. What about our first talk about Eretz Yisrael? Is it an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael, or is it a mitzvah that you fulfill, but it's not an obligation? Well, I'm asking this audience. The answer should be obvious. If it's an obligation, we should get on the plane tonight and get out of here. So the fact that we somehow are here indicates that we assume that no one denies it's a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel, but it's what we call a mitzvah kiyumis. It's a kiyum mitzvah if you do, but it's not an absolute chiyuv. If we today find ourselves in Riverdale, it's not as if today we didn't make kiddush, or tomorrow we won't put on tefillin, or we're not going to daven or do anything of the sort. It's a mitzvah kiyumis. That being the case, if that's really true, and this is what the Tzitz Eliezer says. So let's go back to the original question. Why is it that a person may not leave Eretz Yisrael to perform a mitzvah? As we started talking about the Kibbutz Avim, we said only three exceptions, right? What are the three exceptions? Two or three. To make a parnasa, to find the shidduch, to learn Torah. Those are why not go there? So it's interesting. And this is, we have, yes? Okay, I hear what you're saying. Oh, maybe could be right. There was an opinion of the Shiltos. Let me tell you who the Shiltos was. The Shiltos written by Rabbi Achoy Gon. He lived a long time ago, in the 8th century or 9th century, a very long time ago. And he was one of the Gonim. And he, in fact, says that you may leave Eretz Yisrael for any mitzvah. Why did the Gemara only give two examples? Namely, to study Torah or to get married, said, even for those two, not only, we think only those two are major mitzvahs, mitzvah with a capital M, right? To study Torah, to get married, whoa, those are the biggest mitzvahs. So only for them can you leave, enough for nothing else. He said the opposite. Even for them. What do you mean, even for them? What do you mean, even for them? He said, you know what? He says, for Talmud Torah, you can find a yeshiva in Israel. So it won't be the Rebbe of your dreams. Right? Getting married? So you can marry in Israel too? So it won't be the woman of your dreams. It doesn't sound too... that's next week's topic. But nonetheless, no. But the bottom line is good. You're allowed to leave for the Rebbe of your dreams and for the woman of your dreams. Assume your dreams will be fulfilled. And you're going to try to find her in Riverdale or in New York, wherever you're going to go, leaving Jerusalem. Okay. It's interesting. Go back to the very beginning. We spoke about the idea. You're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for Kibbutz Av, for Aim. Right? And maybe it's only what we call a mitzvah kiyumis for that reason. But let's go further than that. We can make the following suggestion. That Talmud Torah is less of a mitzvah. We said before, you can leave even for Talmud Torah. You know why? Because Talmud Torah is pushed aside by every mitzvah. We just read it before. Right? We just read it before. At the top of this English thing. We said, if it cannot be before another individual, if it can be before another individual, he should not interrupt his studies. If not, he should perform the mitzvah and then return to his studies. So you see clearly that other mitzvahs trump the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So you might have thought, this is what the Nativ suggests, you might have thought that you can only, in its parish on the shoulders, its classical parish, Hamak Shela, you might have thought that you can only leave Eretz Yisrael for other mitzvahs, but not for Talmud Torah. Says the Gemara, no, you can even leave for Talmud Torah. And with this, he comes to our final English source, which is, let's see if we can find it over here. Yeah, it's right before the 13. It is a brief excerpt from the Rambam in the laws of Ishus, of marriage. Let's take a look very, very carefully in what the Rambam has to say. That a person really should get married at a young age. But if he has to support his wife and thus be prevented from studying Torah, he's permitted to delay marriage. For a person who is occupied in the performance of one mitzvah is freed from the obligation to perform another. Surely this applies with regard to the study of Torah. Again, the study of Torah is in a more powerful position than other mitzvahs with respect to the famous rule, Osek b'mitzvah, Potter min ha-mitzvah. What's wrong with this? No? What's wrong with this? The same question we had before. It's going in the wrong direction. The same question we had against the Vilna Gaon, we now have against the Rambam. It's going in the wrong direction. What do you mean, surely? Not true, surely. If it's a fight between other mitzvahs and Talmud Torah, the other mitzvahs win. So why is he saying over here that if one mitzvah can exempt you from another, so certainly it applies to Talmud Torah. It's going in the wrong direction. Huh? This is a big problem. It's a big, big problem.
Well, yeah. You have to say, I just thought of this, but perhaps the best form of Talmud Torah is doing the actual mitzvah. It's
good. Okay.
You learn something, that's
very
fine, but
excellent.
But doing it, that's that you're not only doing it, but you're learning more about it.
Good.
And you're applying learning.
Very good.
So we could keep them all into the same category.
Correct, but you didn't answer the question yet. So I want to answer the question with a remarkable, it's not my answer, the Nativ answers. Look on the second line in the English, the top, the very top. If not, he should perform the mitzvah and then return to his studies. Says the Nativ, the only time you're required to close your book and do the mitzvah is if in fairly short order you can return to your studies. But what will happen if you do this mitzvah, you're going to close the book for life. Will never be an opportunity to go back to your studies. Then the Nativ suggests you're allowed to keep on learning. Now, those who know, it's before Kolos, those who know that when you marry a woman, you have a responsibility, if we discuss this next time, we'll talk about this relationship, a man who's married is financially responsible for his wife. He has to go work in order to make money to feed and support and cherish his wife. And that's a full-time job. He's not going to be able to go back to his yeshiva. Before I told you that he had a thing called kolam. So the Nitziv suggests that the reason why a person is permitted to delay marriage is because the rule of line two, he should perform the mitzvah and then return to his studies, is not applicable. Because if you perform the mitzvah of marriage, you're not going back to your studies. You're going to go to Midtown to make a living. You're not going back to your studies. That's a remarkable idea that the Nitziv has. Yes? Okay, so again, maybe a Seder of learning is a Seder of learning. Everyone keeps saying, you have to keep a Seder of learning. You have to learn a little bit by day and night. But this fellow, who's now learning, what did we say before, 18 hours a day? No. So 10 hours, whatever, 12 hours a day? So, and he's going to come back down, restricted to 12 minutes a day, or most 1 hour a day. That's just the reality of his making a living in this particular case. So he won't be able to go back to that kind of a strong learning. This being the case, let's go back to our original question. Why is it that we said that the boy is going to get a patch if he refuses to bring tea to his mother or father, whereas if he goes away to a faraway land? The answer now, before we gave a different answer, what's the reason? Well, now I'll give a more technical answer. If he comes home for 14 minutes, so he'll close his Gemara, go perform Kibbutz Avei, he'll go right back after 14 minutes and be able to go back to his yeshiva with all of its intensity. But if his yeshiva is 6,000 miles away, or even 100 miles away, he can't go back, give tea and go back. It's an impossibility. So it's a question of the technicality of Yarzal the Talmudo. This would be a somewhat different way of looking at it. Fine. Yes? Women are exempt from the midst of Talmud Torah. So as far as Talmud Torah is concerned, doesn't apply to them. But as far as other mitzvahs, it very much applies to them. Because we said before, the woman is chayav in mitzvahs and chayav in kibud avim. She can have the same exact thing on her hands. Well, she's doing a mitzvah, and the father says, do this, I must do that. So then, in that case, there's no difference between the man and the woman. Only as far as Talmud Torah is there a difference.
Okay, so just for example, if I'm dominating, right, my father asks me to do something, I'm obligated to close my sitter and
go. No, to the contrary, no.
Even though dominating,
well, that depends. Again, you picked an example which is complicated, because we, in previous years, we discussed, is the woman obligated to daven? Let's say something that you have to do. You're benching. The woman has to bench. The woman is benching. The father says, I need my tea. You keep benching. You keep on benching. So the father's going to be impatient, very angry, and you bench nice and slowly. It'll take him an extra 3 minutes to get his tea. So it's too big. You're right. That goes back to my original theory.
He didn't see that she was benching.
Whatever, he's making an unreasonable request. That's exactly fits in. Okay. Now we have a few more minutes left, and I wanted to just sort of round out this topic with some of the more remarkable, how should we say, subdivisions of Kibbutz Av Ve'Em as they present themselves in the actual Shulchan Aruch towards the very end of Simen Reish Mem. We've been discussing until now father and mother. Person only has a father and a mother, only two parents. However, there are other individuals who somehow fit into this. Before I get there, I have to tell you that this is a very important halacha, very, very important. Shulchan Aruch writes that a person is not permitted to make it too difficult for his children, because it's going to cause them to sin. They're not going to be able to discharge their obligations towards him or her. And therefore, you have to try to be merchel them, because a father who's merchel and is covered, it works. So you should always try, the Shulchan Aruch says, not to make any tough demands on your children. Then it says, if you hit your children, in the time of the Talmud, they would excommunicate you. You know why? Because you're causing them to rebel. They hit you back. Of course, the question is, it says, B'no Godol. How do you define a B'no Godol? So the Ritva says, 13. That means once a boy turns 13, the girl turns 12, no more patch. Till then, it's okay. The Ramah says, you're not going to believe this, 22 or 24 years old. Rabbi Volbi said, Zichrono Levracha, the big Mashkiach said, today, 6 years old. You can't hit a kid after that because it scars his soul, and we live in difficult times, And everyone, we should try. Many people have said that they regret that they ever hit their children. I'm in that category. I regret it. But, you know, he did it. He says, you know, Rabbi Volper said for young kids, he called it first aid. You know, you have to know the kid's about to cross the street and it's dangerous. So you have no choice but to give a... This is not the way to raise children. I've said it many times. I'm saying it again. Since it's in front of me, I can't pass over this opportunity. Now, up to the last few paragraphs in this thing. Chayav Adam Lechabed Eishes Aviv Afal Pi She'ena Imo. A stepmother, not your mother, is still in a responsibility to give honor to a stepmother. When? Kol Zman She'oviv Kayam. As long as your father is alive. Once the father is no longer alive, then there's no technical obligation to honor them. Nonetheless, Shulchan Aruch says, Dover Hogun Lechabdom Afli Achamisa. Even if the parent dies and the stepfather or stepmother remains, it's not an absolute technical obligation, but it's proper to give respect. Yes?
So it almost sounds like that's actually a subsidiary of Kibbutz.
Exactly. Because it's derived from Kabeid Es Avicha. The word Es always comes to add something. So Es adds, among other things, a step-parent. Es Avicha to stepmother and Es Imecha to stepfather. Yeah?
Details apply also?
It doesn't say that the level of respect that's required to a stepmother or stepfather is identical with that which is required for an actual parent.
Oh, but wait, one second. What I was saying, though, is that it's not necessarily the mitzvah to her, but because she's married to her father, it's like the father's kibbutz.
You're asking a very good question. What will happen if the father says, you don't have to honor her? If it's his mitzvah, he can be meichel. But if it's direct to her, he can't be meichel. So you're suggesting that the father can be meichel and his wife's covered.
Well, it sounds like that because it's saying that.
Yeah. That's one of the... Again, just going over this sort of superficially, there's a long literature about that. And frankly, you know, I feel that it's a serious question that comes up all the time. How do you relate to a step-parent? How do you relate? For example, one of the basic halachas which is found in the Shulchan Aruch, which should be self-explanatory, is that one may not address a father by his first name. Your father's not. I've said this before, but I guess the statute of limitations has passed already. I can only remember one time in my 35 years in this community where I actually slapped someone else's child. It was a reflex. I couldn't help it. I was sitting here with Kiddush, and some boy called the father by the first name. I just didn't think. I didn't hurt him. I just gave a little whack. What? Because that's non-hierarchical modern psychologists make everyone's equal. I gave a whole speech, which I rarely do, both downstairs and upstairs, 2 weeks ago, the same speech about Zikna, about old age and honoring parents, to reject that point of view. So it's obvious, I think I don't have to tell everyone here, you can't call your father by your mother by your first name. Yeah, that's obvious to everybody in the room, I hope. What about a step-parent? Now what do you do? Here, all things, nothing is obvious anymore. There are people who go, call their step-parent by a first name like nothing. To me, it's wrong. I think it's a violation of this halach. You have to give a certain respect. My father remarried. I asked around, how are you supposed to refer to a stepmother? So I asked a rabbi who came from that part of Europe where they came from, and he said the way you refer to them is tanta. You know, right? Some honorific title. Tanta means an aunt. Before, you can't just call by a name. Who are you? She said, they're the whole generation. What are you? Who are you? So we used to call her tanta, and after a while she said, I prefer to be called Safta with her first name. So, okay, call the Safta with the first name. Good. But, you know, there are those who want even more honor than that. But less than that, just call by the first name. To me, I find it personally to be not in the spirit of this Sifat Shulchan Aruch. Although I know there are others who don't agree with me. I'm just giving you my personal opinion on this matter. These are all very sensitive issues. Now,
what about in-laws?
We're coming there. We're coming. We're saving in-laws for last. That's I'm going in the order of the Shulchan Aruch. In-laws are last. Next, Chayav Adam Bechvod Achiv HaGadol. You have to give honor to your older brother, or maybe oldest brother. It's a big dispute. What exactly does this mean over here, to an older brother? What's this all about? Where does this come from? And why is it so? Why should it be so? What's it all about?
Same S.
Okay, according to some, it's derived from the word S, the Rabba Sachicha HaGadol, correct. There's a discussion. Machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban. Must you honor your older brother after the passing of your father?
At one time he inherited.
Oh, so there was, some understand the older brother to be only the oldest brother, because what we used to call primogeniture. You know what primogeniture, maybe we all talked about this in historical Europe. That means this, the oldest son took the whole field. He stood in for his father, and everyone else had a scurry. Even in the Torah itself, you don't have that concept directly. There is a concept of what we call pishnayim. He gets a double share. That's only left to the oldest brother. And if there's the sister above him, he's nobody. And if there's there are 10 brothers, only the first one, and everyone else is just also again nobody. That's one way to understand it. Okay? Others say no. You have to honor every oldest sibling. There's a certain pecking order.
Do you see Yaakov honoring Esav, or Yitzchak honoring Yishmael?
Well, you know. There's a question of whether honor is accorded to someone who was not worthy of honor. But here again, if the honor is fundamentally to the father, it shouldn't matter if the brother is such a big tzaddik or not, because it's really the honor of the father. But on the other hand, if you honor the father died, perhaps it would no longer be a need to honor the older brother at all. Yes?
Is there a mitzvah of kivud av after your father is
dead? Yes, that we saw. There is a mitzvah. It takes on obviously a different guise. You can no longer give him the food and the drink and his clothes that you can't do. But there are certain things you can do. And what we do is, after to summarize what we spoke about a few weeks ago, we refer to him in a certain way. We say Kaddish. That's considered an equivalent of that. We have honor from him even after his passing. That's explicit in the Talmud.
So then maybe we can't learn that.
Very good question. What Ben is saying is, even if honoring an older brother is a subset of honoring the father, perhaps nonetheless it still continues after the father's death. Possibility. Yes?
An older step sibling.
Ooh. Older step sibling. Whoa.
And tied into whether it goes to the father.
That's complicated. I haven't thought about that one yet. But, instinctively, I don't think there's any such requirements. That's my first response to your question.
The basic rule about honoring an oldest brother, whichever one it means, covers what?
Oh, obviously you're not going to give the honor you give to your father. That's ridiculous.
Why not?
No, it's never meant to be that way. You can't call your oldest brother by his first name. I never heard of that one. That's crazy.
So what does it mean?
Okay, it's a good question. What does it mean? Obviously it's not the same as the honor given to a parent. It means you give him a certain measure of honor. It's not quite clear what that measure of honor is. Some measure of honor. What about your oldest sister? Ooh, now we're really getting touchy. Is there an obligation to honor the oldest sister? It's discussed here and there in the commentaries. So some say, well, is it Derech Eretz? Shalom l'davar b'fnei misha gadol mimenu. Don't speak in the presence of someone who's older than you. It doesn't matter if it's your brother or it's your sister. It doesn't matter if it's the oldest or the older. There's a certain measure of respect for remember, respect your elders? Nobody used to talk that way. That you don't hear that anymore. So respect your elders, you know, now if you're lucky, it's an older generation. But someone who's a little bit older than you, unheard of in these days. Yes?
The verse says on this parasha that Rachel was punished because she spoke
before Leah. There you go. Okay, there you go. So if our first says it, who might argue? But today, in today's world, that's something which is hard for us to grasp. But that's what it's quoted? Okay, a final thing. In-laws. Say the best for last. And now we're in overtime already. That's in-laws just for a minute or two. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Chayav Adam Lechabed Chomif. You're obligated to honor your in-laws. The Ramah throws in grandparents. Grandparents. Some say there's no obligation to grandparents. And the Ramah says, no, there is an obligation to the grandparents, but not as much as parents. That's based on the Medrash and Parshas Vayigash. We'll get to it soon, about Yitzbach Zvochim, Lelokei Aviv Yitzchok, and Avram. It comes from the Avos. Okay. But what about these in-laws? What's the nature of this halach of in-laws? So the Bach says the minimalist. No. Some chuba miktas lechavo lechayav lechavdo kimo shar zekenim chashuvim. You have to honor your in-laws as you would honor other older important people. What does that mean? Your in-laws are not so important, objectively speaking. But they're plenty important because they're your in-laws. So then that's it. You give them as much honor as you would give to another important person who's of that age group. Nothing more than that, says the Shach, quoting from the Bach. Others say no. Others say you have to give them honor which approximates, not exactly the same, which approximates the honor that an individual gives to his actual parents. This is so touchy, and so everyone has different ways of thinking over here. It's not easy to handle with in-laws. It's so tricky. One thing I'll tell you, in my opinion, you're not allowed to call your in-laws by their first name. In my view, it's an absolute no-no. You know, when I grew up, you would never even call an older person by the first name. What, are you kidding? Some of you of your parents' generation? You wouldn't even call it. It was unheard of. Today, I see what goes on. I don't know what happened. It seems to be that lack of the kind of respect that we used to have. Of course, the problem comes, then how do you call your father-in-law, your mother-in-law? What? How do you? So the people who spoke Yiddish had no problem. Schwerlem. You know, but in English, it doesn't go. Father-in-law. I never heard anyone call father-in-law. I never in my life heard anybody. I heard people call Schwer, Schwieger. That's how they used to speak.
You say,
That's what I used to do, until you Baruch Hashem, if you're blessed with children, then it becomes Zayda, Baba, that's how it is. Some call in-laws by Abba and Imo, Daddy and Mommy, and some have a trouble with it, especially with the same title that they call their own parents, and they just have a lot of trouble. You know, it's not a bad thing necessarily. Their adulation and their respect for their own parents is so incredible, I just cannot assign that title to anybody else. And others speak, no, I have respect for my own parents. I still have respect for my in-laws to call them the same name or some different variation. Every situation is different. But what we do have to learn from here is the importance of honoring these individuals who have some connection to Kibbutz Av V'Em, especially in-laws. It's so, so important for the purpose of Shalom Bayis and for the whole family hierarchy situation. With this, we conclude this series on relationships between based on Kibbutz Av V'Em. And if there's no objection, we'll start next week with husbands and wives. Is that what people want?
Yes.
Okay, but no tomatoes, okay? That says it. Okay. Thank you. Good luck. Thank you.
We could not call any older person by their first name.
Yeah, it's unheard of.
I had this cousin of ours, Howard Hall. If we'd write him a letter, dear Mr.